Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Count Every Vote conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this call may be recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Kristen Voorhees, Communication Manager. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chris. Hi, my name is Kristen Voorhees, Communications Manager at the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. Thank you for joining us for this conference call, this press call on Count Every Vote, where leaders from the civil rights groups will discuss the importance of protecting our voting rights for all following the midterm elections and ongoing ballot counting across this country. Today, we'll hear from Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference, John C. Yang, President and Executive Director of Asian Americans Advancing Justice, AAJC, Sherilyn Eiffel, President and Director Counsel of NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, and Kristen Clark, President and Executive Director of Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Vinita Gupta.
Good afternoon. I'm Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, a coalition of more than 200 national organizations working to build an America as good as its ideals. Thank you for joining us today. Ensuring that every eligible voter in America can cast a ballot is critical for the integrity of our democracy, and voters agree. In last week's midterm elections, people turned out for civil and human rights, and especially for democracy reform. Civil rights voters in Maryland, Nevada, and Michigan expanded access to the ballot. Several states demanded fair elections by voting to take the politics out of redistricting. Voters in Florida restored the right to vote to more than 1.4 million formerly incarcerated people. Those are huge wins for democracy. Americans are just fed up with the electoral system and ready to make casting a ballot easier. In headline after headline on Election Day, we read reports and got reports of barriers to voting, including long lines in majority black neighborhoods, antiquated and broken voting machines, problems with voter registrations and provisional ballots, polling places were understaffed, ill-equipped, and misinformed, all of which hurt voters who showed up to exercise their civic duty. As we look to 2019 and 2020, we have to confront this crisis of democracy. We must lead the work to improve election administration and protect people's fundamental right to vote. With new leadership in the House of Representatives and sweeping changes across the country, the civil rights community has the opportunity to put forward an affirmative vision for democracy while ensuring responsible oversight in order to expand civil and human rights for everyone in America. Essential to that affirmative vision is protecting the right to vote. And as you know, election officials are working to ensure that every vote is counted in Florida and Georgia. This is an important part of the democratic process that many Americans don't always get to see. This is lawful, vital, painstaking work. Elections this close might be out of the ordinary, but the diligence and careful counting of every vote is not, and we support those public servants and thank them for their work. We all deserve a democratic process that ensures a full and fair accounting of every single vote in every single polling place in every single community. And that count must be transparent so that we can trust that every voice has been heard and that our democracy remains intact. Voters did their part by showing up, and now the officials must do theirs. The civil rights community has fought back against egregious attempts to silence voters at every turn, and we will continue to do so in the days and months ahead. Americans throughout the country overcame obstacle after obstacle to reach the ballot box, and the process now needs to represent them. Our voting system owes it to them to make their voices heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Vinita. Now we will hear from John C. Yang, President and Executive Director of Asian Americans Advancing Justice, AAJC. John?
Thank you very much. My name is John Yang. I am the President and Executive Director of Asian Americans Advancing Justice, AAJC. Our mission is to advance the civil and human rights for Asian Americans and to build and promote a fair and equitable society for all. Asian Americans have had a history of low voter engagement and thus have not traditionally been viewed as an influential voting bloc. In the 2016 election, the voting rate for Asian Americans was only 49%. But those statistics are rapidly changing. Moreover, as Asian Americans are the racial ethnic group that is growing at the fastest rate in this country, our community is poised to make a difference in many elections to come. Certainly in this past election, we saw a growing energy among Asian American voters and their desire to exercise their right to vote. As our demographics increase and the Asian American electorate becomes more engaged, it is imperative to remove the barriers to voting that exist in our communities. Each election is important, and voting is one of the most important rights and responsibilities that citizens have. Our democracy depends on every vote being counted, and our election protection efforts have focused on increasing language access for all eligible voters. During the election season, as we operated our 888 API vote hotline on Election Day, we heard many concerns with respect to interpretation of what are called Section 208 guidelines that led to confusion at the polls. Section 208 of the Voting Rights Law provides for a person with limited English proficiency to bring someone into the voting booth with them for additional assistance. Since approximately a third of the Asian American population has limited English proficiency and many speak a language other than English at home, providing the crucial in-language access to voting materials and information is only half of the story if we see our voters get turned away, denied the ability to have assistance, or who experience any other type of barriers to voting. Our independent affiliate in Atlanta has been litigating exact match, absentee ballots, and signature match policies and their impact on the Asian American community. Numerous Asians have been disenfranchised of their right to vote simply because their names or signatures were not identical to voter registration materials. We have strong laws on the books that protect voters, but those laws can and should be strengthened by restoring the Voting Rights Act of 1965. The Voting Rights Act held state and local levels accountable for removing barriers that prevented African Americans and other people of color from exercising their right to vote, as guaranteed under the 15th Amendment. While we seek the restoration of the Voting Rights Act, we must make sure that those who are responsible for enforcing the current laws are educated about them and held accountable for enforcing them in a fair and equitable manner. Voting is not a privilege earned by speaking or writing perfect English. Voting is a fundamental right in our democracy, and just because you do not speak English perfectly, you are not less of a citizen. We are determined to help remove the existing barriers and ensure our community has full access to the ballot box. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Now we will hear from Sherilyn Eiffel, President and Director Counsel of NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. Sherilyn?
Thank you. This is Sherilyn Eiffel. I'm the President and Director Counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, the nation's oldest legal civil rights organization. We are an entirely separate organization from the NAACP and have been since 1957. Last week's election, on one hand, was good for democracy. Millions of voters turned out. An unprecedented number of women were elected to Congress, including the first Native American women and first Muslim American women, and voting rights were restored to more than a million people in the state of Florida. But it was also a wake-up call about the need for us to do more, to do serious maintenance on our democracy. According to a report from the Brennan Center for Justice, the majority of America's voting machines are obsolete, and we saw the cost of our aging election machinery on Election Day. Some voters waited more than 4 hours to vote because of machine malfunctions or machine shortages in Georgia and in Texas and in many other places, requiring federal courts to order the extension of polling hours into the evening. At the same time, all of this happened in the context of unprecedented voter suppression, which was revealed even before the election, from Brian Kemp in Georgia's brazen suspension of 30,000 voting applications in Georgia to the relocation of the only polling place in heavily Latino Dodge City, Kansas, to the new voter ID law in North Dakota that served to disenfranchise Native Americans, to discrimination in the provision of early voting in Waller County, Texas, to Prairie View A&M students, a matter that LDF had to litigate in the week before the election. Voter suppression is also alive and well in the Florida recount. The president and governor are using baseless claims of voter fraud to sow racial fear and prevent every vote from being tallied, a tactic we've seen throughout our history. It's tactics like these that made the Voting Rights Act of 1965 so necessary, and why this election shows how imperative it is that Congress take up a fix to the Voting Rights Act to address the terrible Shelby County versus Holder decision from 2013. In this election, it's estimated that nearly 116 million people turned out to cast votes. It's the highest election turnout in any midterm election since it has been recorded. This demonstrates tremendous public confidence in the system of voting in our democracy to produce results. The turnout was especially high among young people. This once again demonstrates the willingness and the desire of young people to engage effectively in our democracy. And yet now we are telling people that some of those votes that were cast should not be counted and will not be counted. This terrible message sends a message of discouragement to those who organized, to those who came out early, to those who stayed out late, to those who stood online for 4 hours to be able to exercise their most important right as citizenship, as citizens, to participate in the political process. To now demonize those attempting to do what is necessary in a democracy, to count every vote, is contrary to the message that we send about the importance of political engagement by citizens in our country. It's critical that the president and other elected officials back off of this process and allow those who are working hard every day to complete the process that started on Election Day and to count every ballot, be allowed to do so without political pressure and without the bully pulpit of the president demonizing their activities. Voter suppression happens before Election Day. We certainly saw, as we were in 7 states on Election Day, that voter suppression happens on Election Day. But it is truly disheartening to see voter suppression continuing to happen after Election Day. It's critical that we count every vote. Americans are counting on us to do it.
Thank you, Sherilyn. Now we will hear from Kristen Clark, President and Executive Director of Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law.
Thank you. This is Kristen Clark, President and Executive Director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, and I'm proud to join my colleagues today in fighting for a democracy that works and one in which every voice is counted and every voice is heard. The Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law leads the nonpartisan election protection program. This is the nation's largest nonpartisan voter protection effort. Election protection is anchored by the 866 Our Vote Hotline, and this year we led our largest midterm program in our 17-year history. We partnered with more than 100 local and state organizations, including partners on this call. We activated 4,000 volunteer lawyers. We ran 20 call centers around the country. We fielded 31,000 calls from voters on Election Day alone, and since Election Day, we've fielded more than 5,000 calls from voters across the country. None of these were voters calling to report voter fraud. Many of these callers were people who have encountered barriers at polling sites and who continue to encounter barriers with respect to provisional and absentee ballots. Many voters who have voted absentee have been trying to confirm if their ballot has been received and counted, the same with respect to provisional ballots. Our goal has been to provide support that can help ensure that every vote is counted. A few overarching observations based on what we heard from the tens of thousands of voters who contacted us this election cycle. The barriers were particularly stark in Georgia, Florida, Texas, North Carolina, and Arizona. And this is unsurprising because many of these are states that were previously required to obtain federal review of voting changes prior to implementation. We are continuing to live through the fallout from the Supreme Court's devastating ruling in 2013 in Shelby County, Alabama v. Holder. In addition, we saw officials abuse discretion and resort to minutiae this election cycle as a means to blocking voters who were seeking to cast provisional and absentee ballots. We saw this in Gwinnett County, where officials sought to void absentee ballots over an alleged signature match. And we saw this in other communities, where officials sought to penalize voters for simple mistakes like writing the wrong date, not signing their name carefully enough, or neglecting to write their birth dates outside of envelopes. This election cycle, we also saw that litigation stands as a critical tool for holding election officials accountable. And finally, we also saw pervasive and systemic problems that make clear that we have a great deal of work to do to eliminate voting barriers in advance of the 2020 election cycle. Aging voting equipment in states like Georgia and South Carolina must be replaced to prevent the loss we saw on Election Day. Emergency procedures to deal with natural disasters and other unanticipated crises are critical. We need better trained poll workers. How we register and activate 1.4 million newly eligible voters in Florida are among the biggest challenges that we face as we look to 2020. I'll close by noting that it is critical that Congress make restoration of the Voting Rights Act its highest priority when it gets back to business in the new year. What we saw this election cycle makes clear that voter suppression is the new Jim Crow. It reared its ugly head across the country at the local level, at the state level, and we intend to redouble our efforts to address this crisis in advance of 2020. We are continuing to operate our 866 Our Vote hotline. Our goal is to make sure that every vote counts before election results are certified. We deem this work critical to ensure that the public can have confidence in the outcome of elections in our country, regardless of the outcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen, and thank you to all of our speakers. We will now open it up for question and answers, and I would just advise if you have a particular question for a speaker to just indicate that, and I will turn it over to our operator to provide instructions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the question queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press star one now. And we will pause a moment to allow questions to queue. And our first question comes from Mitch Perry with Florida Phoenix. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. This is a question for Ms. Clark. A big issue down here in Florida has been about mismatched signatures with absentee and provisional ballots. I was wondering if you could talk more about that and anything else that you've watched observing the recount down here in Florida.
Well, we observed a great deal of flip-flopping this week. We were pleased that the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals rejected Secretary of State Ken Dentzner's request to stay the lower court's order to extend the deadline to cure issues with vote-by-mail and provisional ballots. But this, again, is an example of officials abusing discretion and using alleged signature mismatches to discount ballots cast by eligible voters. Voters have until tomorrow at 5 p.m. to cure issues with their ballots, but our efforts to support voters were hijacked yesterday after a court issued a favorable ruling in the morning, and the Secretary of State unnecessarily chose to appeal the court's order by going to the 11th Circuit. For several hours in the day, voters were in a state of limbo. There were voters who contacted officials to cure issues and were told, call back later, because the issue had returned to court. Our hope is that voters across the state of Florida are empowered and that they take every step necessary to ensure that their votes count by 5 p.m. We have been here all week taking calls from voters in Florida and Georgia, and they've represented the lion's share of calls that we've taken since Election Day on the 866 Our Vote hotline.
And our next question comes from Emma Content with Respectability. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Respectability, we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan group dedicated to advancing opportunities for people with disabilities. I'd just like to talk a little bit about that. A study at the Government Accountability Office inspected 137 polling places on Election Day in 2016 and found that roughly two-thirds of them had at least one error in accessibility. My question is, how do we ensure that voting remains accessible for voters with disabilities and that states remain accountable for enforcing those accessibility laws?
This is Sherilyn Eiffel with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. I think this is an excellent question, and actually a question that I think raises a matter that's not been discussed sufficiently as we examine the problems of this election cycle. And that is that we actually have a piece of legislation enacted in the years following the Florida recount in 2000 and that disastrous election, the Help America Vote Act. And the purpose of the Help America Vote Act was to create standards for states to provide shared best practices, to provide funds to states to upgrade outdated voting equipment and to identify procedures and also to manage administrative complaints about various voting facilities and procedures. This is a place where I think we have failed to uphold the letter and spirit of HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, which is supposed to be the place through the Election Assistance Commission in which there are the kinds of checks on voting places and facilities that you described to ensure that they are compliant with the law, to ensure that the machines work and are certified by the Election Integrity Commission and can be used by people with disabilities and also are not subject to malfunction, switching votes, and so forth. I really think it's important that we remember that we have been here before and that we created a piece of legislation and a federal commission that is designed to address these kinds of problems. So rather than the one-off, if we want to systemically ensure that our voting apparatus, machinery, and practices are consistent with federal law and consistent with what we want for this democracy, we have to take seriously the Help America Vote Act and the role of the Election Assistance Commission, including in ensuring that our voting systems are accessible, fully accessible, to those with disabilities.
And this is Vanita Gupta from the Leadership Conference. The Leadership Conference actually did a series of meetings with disability rights groups, including the National Disability Rights Network and several other groups in the lead up to the midterm elections, in part to be able to do advocacy and outreach with local election officials and to do outreach with local media around the ways in which local election officials were using ADA compliance as a basis for closing polling places and the like, and really trying to do that outreach locally to ensure that there was a united front between across civil rights groups to say that ADA compliance should not be used as grounds to close polling sites and that it has other broader civil rights ramifications. But this issue around accessibility of polling places, around accessibility of voter registration materials, both online and physical accessibility, are issues that that are deeply important and that remain a part of the broad civil rights agenda to ensure that everyone has access, is able to access the polls and then has their vote counted.
And once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone phone. We will pause another moment to allow questions to queue. And it appears there are no further questions over the phone at this time. I would like to go ahead and turn it back to the speakers for any closing remarks.
Thank you all for joining, and thank you to John and Sherilyn and Kristen for their organization's incredible work on these issues. Thank you for joining this call. Thank you.